fires deep, middle of the field, intercepted. An incredible pick by Patrick Peterson.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Oh, baby! They can't block Calais Campbell.
Cuts right to the five, Brown to the end zone. He's in! Touchdown!
You've got to be kidding me, Carson Palmer.
From Cardinals headquarters in Tempe.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Now, wasn't it BA who said that coaches typically get sick at the end of a long NFL campaign? It's
yes.
A sort of a rhetorical question there. Darren Urban, Kyle Odegaard, yours truly, Paul Calvisi on Cardinals Underground. By the way, Darren already rocking the playoff beard for 2017.
That's right.
That's what's going on right now?
Exactly.
I see.
You always want to plan ahead.
Okay. You're a little under the weather. I'm a lot under the weather. The Iron Man, Kyle Odegaard over there, is all good, but it has been a long season. There's no doubt, and 2017 is underway, coming off 2016, where you didn't meet the expectations based on 2015. And
yeah,
that's sort of the equation right there, is it not?
Yeah, it wasn't. It's definitely a weird feeling after the last couple of years where we're sitting here in the first week of January and we're not planning for a playoff game. And even 2 years ago, when Ryan Lindley was the quarterback and you kind of felt like, okay, this is going to have a short shelf life, There's still a vibe in the building. There's still a good feeling. There's still the idea that you're in the playoffs, because the bottom line is, and it sounds so cliche, but it is so true, if you're in, you feel like anything can happen. And part of that has to do with those of us who were around in 2008 when the Cardinals obviously made that Super Bowl run and nobody expected them to, including most of us in the building. So you feel like as long as you're in the playoffs, there's always something that could happen. So when you don't get that chance, it's definitely deflating.
Especially when you come into the season and everybody's talking about this team is good enough to make the Super Bowl or win the Super Bowl off of what they did in 2015. So it did end early. We've had a few weeks to comprehend that they're not going to make the playoffs. So I think there's a little bit of that edge off where people have realized what's going on. But it's definitely a different feeling here.
DJ Humphries was asked on Monday what's wrong with the Cardinals, right? And to his credit, he said, you know what? I haven't been around long enough to know. And he didn't want any piece of it.
Yeah.
But he did admit, you know what? He just turned 23. He just finished his first year playing.
He was trying to figure out which teams were in the AFC and the NFC last year.
So a man's got to know his limitations. So I admire DJ Humphries for that. But you know what? We have been around long enough around here, and we do position ourselves as football doctors, if you will. So let's go ahead and diagnose a season and a team. And we've talked about this ad nauseum, but it bears repeating. You ended up top 10 in both total offense and defense. You ended up 4-1-1 in the division. You were 7th in point differential, plus 56. And your big offseason objective was to improve the pass rush. You went from 20th in sacks, 20th, to number 1 overall.
Yeah.
So what didn't happen? What went wrong?
Well, again, you've got little things you can point to. Turnover ratio, which they didn't finish in positive. They weren't negative, but even though they forced a bunch of turnovers, they turned the ball over a little bit too much. And you know, we've talked about it a million times. The special teams wins and loses you games, especially when it's close. And you know, the Cardinals had a lot of close losses this year, games that would have turned on a field goal or maybe not a block punt or better coverage of a punt return or whatever it might be. And there were definitely other things. I mean, yes, the Cardinals finished 2nd overall in total defense, but we all can point to times when the miscommunication on the back end just killed them.
Tony Jefferson said, and we were standing right there when he said, we didn't play smart as a team, especially early in the season.
Right. And they didn't. And even offensively, yeah, they got a lot of yards, but especially earlier in the year, you had mentioned before off air about how, you know, they couldn't score in the first quarter.
Of the first 8 games.
They did not score a lot of points in the red zone, a lot of touchdowns early in the season. I mean, you everything gets changed because the last 3 games, they all of a sudden became what they were last season in terms of scoring points, even though they lost to the Saints. All of a sudden the points came in bunches and you're like, okay, it's too bad that came, you know, after they were officially eliminated from the playoffs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it was there.
But their passing game was so good last year. You had every single receiver back, that it made total sense for them to enter the season thinking, we're going to do this vertical passing game. David Johnson is just going to give us another weapon and even make us more balanced. But that was like so perplexing, that Michael Floyd was so ineffective all year. John Brown gets the sickle cell trait that you couldn't have predicted. J.J. Nelson breaks his hand in training camp. So your 2, 3, and 4 receivers gave you so much less than you thought. And, you know, really through probably the Seahawks game or maybe the Carolina game, I think right in there is when they started changing a little bit philosophically, but they kind of kept on trying that vertical passing game, and it never came to fruition, and the offense struggled so much early, and the defense played well statistically, and they really beat up on the bad teams, but when they went against a good quarterback or a pretty good offense, they didn't play very well. So every close game they lost, a lot of different factors, but this team certainly wasn't as good as last year's, but I don't think they were as bad as their record would indicate.
And you track the one-score games all season long. They ended up winning, what, 3 of 9?
So they went 3-5-1. And especially you look at some of them, like the tie, obviously they had the chip shot field goal to win. That Rams game they lost, which was a one-score game, which they dominated statistically. It felt like they should have won that game at home. The Patriots one was kind of a toss-up. The Dolphins one, they trailed most of it and then lost at the end, but they had the ball and a chance to win, and then it starts pouring rain and Carson fumbles the snap, and that's it. So a lot of factors played into it, and when you don't do as well in one-score games, when you only play 16 games, it's really tough to come back from that unless you're a dominant team.
And the day after the season ended, BA pretty much stated that, you know, if the New England game would have gone differently, the entire season might have gone differently. If they get a couple of those wins, the New England game, the Rams game at home, where, yeah, they totally dominated, as you mentioned, but they lost a turnover battle 5-1 in that game, you know. And then he hinted a little bit that there was a seed of doubt, that maybe the confidence wasn't quite there yet. The swagger most definitely was not there.
I look at that first month and I say, okay, could things have been different with the Patriots game? Could that have changed some things? Maybe. And obviously, I definitely think it would have made a difference in terms of maybe how Catanzaro approached the year. But the next week, they beat the crap out of the Buccaneers. Mm-hmm. To me, the turning point in the season, the biggest point in the season was weeks 3 and 4. You went cross country to Buffalo. You were feeling good about yourself after the Bucs. You could easily write off whatever you want to write off for the Patriots game, and then you mailed in the Buffalo game. I mean, you played horribly special teams. You weren't offensively, you weren't ready to play. Defensively, you were okay, but that got sideways way too quickly. You had a team that was majorly struggling, and the crowd was ready to turn on them, and you let them dominate you, and then you forced it at the end, and Carson Palmer jacked up his season stats with one quarter of bad throws and receivers not going with it. And then you pile that on with, as you said, the Rams game, which you felt good about it, and it was a carbon copy of the week 4 loss to the Rams at home the year before. You outplayed them completely, you couldn't score in the red zone, and you lost a turnover battle, and that's what happened. And in this case this year, you had the extra special teams factor where Justin Bethel gets a finger in the eye, goes down, and Tavon Austin takes the punt return right up the side where Justin Bethel should have had contain, and gives them a short field to score a touchdown. And to me, that's where it all got sideways.
And I like that question, because I'm not going to argue with you that weeks 3 and 4 were just as costly as any other week, you know, maybe more especially. Yeah. But in terms of the vibe on the sideline, that Seattle tie most definitely felt like a loss.
That's what I was going to say, that game.
At 3-3, you slug it out with the Seahawks, who at that point were definitely among the top 2 or 3 teams in the NFL. You know, you beat them down. Physically, you beat them down. I mean, later we learned that, like, Richard Sherman and some of the guys that had been on the field for 95 snaps had to take IVs after that game. Mm-hmm. I mean, and then you didn't get the win. I mean, that, if you were looking to restore the swag, that was the game.
I would agree with that. I would agree, just because for all the things I just mentioned, those other two games, I think they had a chance to recapture it.
And you were within two games. You could truly target that Christmas Eve game.
Yes, and everything just got. But again, what are we talking about here? We're talking about little things here and there, the Rams loss and the Seattle loss, and, you know, they had a couple of really crappy games, but they, you know, they lost by 7 to the Saints. They lost at the last second to the Dolphins, where they did all the work to come back, and they still couldn't pull it off. I mean, again, this is what their issues were, is if they just win a couple of those close games, which is basically what Bruce Arians boiled it down to anyways.
Yeah, and obviously we're looking forward now because the season is over. And a lot of – you look at teams with losing records and people will lump them in together, but there's clearly a lot of different dynamics at play. And you look at the point differential on these close games, so that's why you feel like if you can get the special teams just to an average unit and you still feel good about your offense and your defense – so you just want to tinker right now. And I know they have a lot of free agents, and some are going to leave because they're not going to have the money to keep them. But you're going to keep your core intact, feeling like, okay, if we can fix our special teams, if we can make a few tweaks on offense and defense, we're definitely feeling like we can be a playoff team next year. And it's not – we're not at the point where, hey, let's tear it down and rebuild because we have an older quarterback. They still feel like they have another run in them.
I don't mean to interrupt there, Paulie, but you just made me think of something when you talk about keeping the core. Look, I love Larry Fitzgerald as much as everybody, and I hope he plays next season, and I think they need him next season. But the reality is he made a couple of big catches the last two games that he absolutely did, but they scored a lot of points with Larry Fitzgerald not necessarily playing a huge factor. If David Johnson is healthy and they get some receivers that can catch the ball and not be inconsistent, even if they're not on Larry's level, I believe this offense can be very effective.
Well, it was Larry's first touchdown reception since week five.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. You look at this Cardinals offense and you look at what went wrong, and you got to start with the offensive line to me. And, even when they were healthy, they weren't playing all that well. If you're really looking at going next season without someone, what about Jared Valdir? A Skip Bayless hot take here. Do you trade Jared Valdir in the offseason thinking, you know what, we have our left tackle of the future in DJ Humphries. If somebody makes us an offer we can't refuse, we get his salary off the books for the next 2 years. We're not so sure how he'd fare at right tackle anyway. He just told us he hadn't played there since his redshirt freshman year in college. If you're Steve Keim, are you taking phone calls and listening on that one?
I mean, sure, I'd listen on every player on the roster if you're going to make a deal that I think is going to make my team better. But I'm not sure what kind of market Jared Valdir will have. I mean, tackles are always valuable, but you're paying him a lot of money already. I think he's going to be 30 maybe this year or 29. I think you're in a good position to keep him if you're the Cardinals. I'd be very happy having DJ Humphries and Jared Valdir as my tackles. You know Mike Iupati should be able to bounce back. He's not too old yet. He's a perennial Pro Bowler. So I like those three guys on the line, and we don't know what conversations there have between general managers, and if the Cardinals want to do that, they can. But Steve Keim has put so many resources into his offensive line, and knowing how important it is to keep Carson Palmer upright, being a quarterback that isn't mobile, I think Jared Valdir is a critical piece, and I would be much more apt to keeping him rather than shopping him and looking to get a different piece, because I'd rather have him on my team.
I would never say never, but I definitely think that that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. If for no other reason is we've heard for the last, because you're not getting a first round pick for Jared Valdir, and you're probably not even getting a second round pick. So let's say you can get a third round pick for Jared Valdir. You're getting a third round pick. You're gonna probably have to spend on an offensive lineman because you now need a tackle, or you need that kind of depth. And all we've heard for the last 2 years, all I've heard multiple times from Harold Goodwin, both in press conferences and when I've had one-on-one conversations with him, and his vocalness about this only has increased, is how these offensive linemen are coming out of college not ready. And so you're already trying to figure out what you're going to do at one of your guard spots and maybe your center spot. And now you're going to open up another spot on that offensive line that you don't know, and you may have to put in a young guy who you don't trust. I just think that's a little far-fetched at this point. If you're in a position where you think you are, which is that you're going to try and make a run next year and you feel like you're close.
And I think because of where they are with the window, I would agree with that. Where they are with the quarterback, if it was a 26-year-old quarterback instead of 36, 37-year-old quarterback, then I would think about it. And to your point about Harold Goodwin, until he got hurt, I mean, each and every Thursday, what would Goody say? He'd say, well, there's Jared Valdir and there's the rest of the offensive linemen. Only Valdir was playing at a certain level, whereas the rest of the line was not.
Yeah, he's been extremely consistent, really good player at a really valuable position. Whether he's on the left or if they move him to the right, both tackle spots are so key right now teams are really moving their edge rushers around, and it's not just going against the left tackle anymore. So those are two of as much publicity as a Fitz and other receivers get. I mean, your two tackles are so important, and they're two of your biggest keys. So I would much rather just keep Humphreys and Veldheer and be happy with those spots and then kind of tinker around with the rest.
You know, when you look at the window per se, right, I go back to our post-game radio interview with BA in L.A., and I sort of asked him a big-picture question about the season and does he need to go into a deep dive to assess exactly what's wrong with his team? And his answer was, well, we missed three damn kicks. You know, and then he did say later in that interview that they're going to assess the kicking game. Mm-hmm. To me, that's a euphemism for there will be blood, there will be changes when it comes to the kicking game. Agreed?
Well, I think they'll definitely address it. I don't think there's absolute that there's going to be changes because, well, quite frankly, I thought there was going to be changes last offseason and there weren't. So, you know, I think it's one of those things where I think they definitely look at it. I think they definitely look at both positions, and I quite frankly will be surprised if there aren't four kickers / punters around at least during the offseason. You know, a kicker, and we got to see what happens with Catanzaro. He's a restricted free agent, and as my good friend Kyle Odegaard did make point of earlier today, they may not even tender him because that would be more money than they would want to pay, so they might let him be a free agent and then try and bring him back that way. So we'll have to see how that goes. I do think Catman's around to be in the competition, but I expect somebody else to come and kick. I mean, I think you have to have that, and Matt Weil hasn't done it long enough. I figure you need to have somebody else out there, and may the best man win in both cases. And who knows, maybe you do the same thing with long snapper at this point.
And the nice thing about this is your special teams were really bad this year, but you can clean up that unit pretty easily where you don't have to spend a lot of money. You don't have to spend high draft picks. You can just bring guys in, and a lot of it is the backups on the, you know, regular defensive and offensively. They're the ones that are being used in the coverage units, and you just kind of figure that out. You hope those guys don't get hurt, and then your coverage units are better. So you can just do a few small things to make your special teams better. It's not like you're the Saints defense where they've been trying for years to get better, and it's just really hard to fix a unit that is really bad on offense or defense. So it's nicer that if you're going to have a really bad one, it was special teams this year, and you can quickly turn it around.
And I will say that with the kicking positions too, I don't know what they're going to do, but my thought process is, again, you get 90 men in the offseason. You can't do any hitting until you get to training camp. I mean, to me, you could bring in guys and really, really work that part of it hard during the OTAs and stuff. And then if somebody doesn't impress you, you can replace one or two of those guys going into camp, so you have those extra bodies when everybody starts hitting. But at least you've looked at it closely. And I know it's not the same as if you were in preseason games and all that stuff, but to me, that's something where you can kind of play with a couple of roster spots at least until you get to training camp if you want.
And the continuity, too. I think it was a legitimate deal with having three different holders for Catanzaro, having two long snappers, and the first one obviously struggled pretty badly. He missed some kicks, but if you look at his career percentages, he was so far down this year, and he had a couple blocked. And I think mentally it was a tough year for him, not knowing exactly what was going on in the snapping and the holding. So if you can get your three guys, have them working together all training camp, that's a big plus.
And for those wondering, the day after the season ended, BA reiterated no changes on the coaching staff, unless Harold Goodwin perhaps might get a head coaching gig. And as of this recording, he was a scheduled interview with the Jags and the Bills and the Rams. And we understand the Chargers are in the mix as well, so stay tuned on that front. And then he mentioned how Chandler Jones isn't going anywhere either. The franchise tag. To me, guys, okay, he said it more than once in that press conference, and to some degree said it unprompted about Chandler's future. To me, he's talking to Chandler's agent. Because Steve Keim said, 2 months ago in his segment on Arizona Sports that they were negotiating and they were talking. I'm guessing they've hit an impasse, and BA had a little message for Team Chandler Jones, Team 55, in his press conference.
That makes sense. They're drawing their line in the sand, but if you're Chandler Jones's agent and you see all the deals that these edge rushers are getting that are in their prime, you have a lot of leverage too. So it might be a battle between the two sides, but I think both of them can kind of hold strong, knowing that the Cardinals do have the franchise tag. Chandler Jones' side does have this guy who's a double-digit sack guy who's only 26, 27 years old. So it'll be interesting to see how those negotiations go, but neither side has to cave.
If they have to tag him, is that bad for the rest of the cap? Is that a bad sign to try and keep as many guys as possible?
I mean, it's more of a team-friendly thing to have the franchise tag, and it's nice to have there. Obviously, he's going to be a big cap number for next year, but any one-year deal is going to benefit a team instead of a player.
And I would say that without knowing the exact cap numbers, I would figure looking at the other stuff, his salary would be around $15 million if he got tagged. Now, I would guess that his cap number, if he got a long-term deal done, would be a little bit less than that.
And that's what I mean. Yeah,
but probably not significantly so. I mean, if you sign a deal that he's going to sign at this point, I would figure would carry a fairly large cap hit unless they really backload it, and they might want to do that. I don't know. But Calais Campbell just had a $15 million plus cap hit all this season, and you're going to lose that. So all you're doing is replacing Calais's cap number with Chandler's cap number, and you lose the almost $8 million cap number for Chandler this year that you'll get back. So now you'd lose Calais Campbell in the process. But, I mean, that's one of those things where I think that's all been, as they like to say, baked into the equation. They know. I think they've gone into this knowing that when they traded for him, it could be hard to re-sign him. I think they went into this knowing that there was a good chance they'd have to franchise tag him. They know all this stuff and realize that this was going to happen. And that's the other thing. When we start talking about the cap and who they're re-signing and who they might bring back and Calais Campbell and Tony Jefferson, Chandler Jones, look, it's not like all of a sudden in the last 3 weeks they're like, okay, these guys are free agents. We got to figure out what we're doing. They've been thinking about this all season. Like you said, they've already been talking to Chandler Jones. They already know how they want the budget to go, who they're breaking it down for, how much they're willing to pay Calais Campbell, how much they're willing to pay Tony Jefferson. And that's why there's all this trepidation of whether those guys are going to come back, because the reality probably is that, you know, my guess is, and I'm just spitballing here, that agents out there probably already have an idea. If you're Tony Jefferson's agent or Calais Campbell's agent, you probably already have an idea what another team is willing to pay them. Even though you're not supposed to, you probably have an idea. And so, you know.
And we think we have an idea of the Cardinals cap room, but the last two off seasons, we've had Steve Keim in this studio for the Big Red Rage in February, and we've thrown out the reported cap number or cap space, and he's laughed. He scoffed. He said that is erroneous. And so,
but he doesn't. He doesn't correct you though.
Oh, he'll never give you the number.
He'll never get. So the number might be off, but it might be only be off by $500,000.
The way he reacts, he makes it seem like it's not even close.
But we still have an idea based on the contracts that are here already. They're not going to have a ton of cap room, especially if you sign Chandler Jones to a pretty big deal. They have a lot of free agents, and I think it's inevitable that you're going to lose a couple of those guys that are pretty good players on the defensive side of the ball.
Safety, right? I mean, safety?
Yeah.
I mean, right. Isn't the spotlight right now on safety, if nothing else, just as a position group?
Yeah.
Sure.
With Tony Jefferson, DJ Swearinger, free agents, and the uncertainty around Tyrann Mathieu.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And play secondary overall, because Marcus Cooper, who now started for you all season, he's a free agent too. So you don't know. And that's the other problem with it. The cap room, you know, not only do you have all these free agents, I mean, again, you got to sign, it's going to be the top 51 will count against the cap in the offseason. Well, if you're losing all these key players and you're going to have to sign a bunch of key players, I mean, that the cap room, you know, builds up real quickly when you're having to replace all these guys on the roster.
I mean, 22 free agents. Even I think you were talking about this, Kyle. Look at the 2013 draft class. I mean, Penny free agents, Minter and Watford and Ellington and Okafor and Steph Taylor. You got the deal done with Tyrann Mathieu. Obviously, Jonathan Cooper is long gone.
Yeah,
I mean, just right there.
A lot of guys that aren't getting a lot of the pub that we've been talking about. But yeah, those you mentioned, A.Q. Shipley, Jermaine Gresham. I mean, there's a ton of guys that are free agents, whether they're starters. I mean, we've talked about the stars, but there's some starters that are free agents. There's a lot of depth guys that are free agents, which are easier to fill. Where you know, if you're talking about a Stephon Taylor, if you want him back, you probably just offer him the minimum and he takes it or not, but you're not going to give him more than that. Yeah. And there's a lot of guys that you can move around, keep or not, but that's why the focus is on the big ones, because you have to make some real decisions on a Tony Jefferson or a DJ Swearinger or Jermaine Gresham, because if you sign Chandler Jones, you're going to lose somebody, and which one do you want back? And a lot of it goes into positions, what positional value. There's a lot of things in the creation of it, obviously.
The full list of free agents, by the way, is on azcardinals.com.
There you go. And by the way, the Cardinals are going to draft 13th. Is that correct?
Yes.
13th. Okay. All right. So knowing this can all change completely based on who you sign in free agency, I mean, I'm going either corner or inside linebacker, a guy who can truly run sideline to sideline and solve that. That's what I'm going first round.
I'm going quarterback.
Oh, in the first round.
Yep.
13 overall.
It's hard to get that high in the draft anymore.
That's true, and I don't expect them to be, but you know, unfortunately, the year that they're up there is supposedly a down year for quarterbacks compared to maybe where it is going to be next year. So it'll be interesting to see how they look at those guys. I would agree. I mean, those are the couple of the positions. I mean, if you get a rangy, nice inside linebacker, that'd be really good. A cornerback would be good. You know, I know Bruce Arians said no receiver, but I mean, if you get a Larry Fitzgerald type talent that you see out there that drops all the way to 13, and I don't know anybody, I'm just bringing that up. I don't know how you pass that. You know, unless there's another very talented cornerback or linebacker or whatever that you see there.
And by the way, Larry did keep the football after his 107th and final catch of the 2016 season. We don't know of his career, but he has done that before. I mean, just so everybody knows, as you guys know, I mean, he kept it after he passed Chris Carter and Marvin Harrison a few weeks earlier. So, I mean, he has kept footballs
and,
over.
And he knew that was the one that was going to be the NFL receptions leader of football. So I would have kept it, too.
I think he drew a big asterisk on it.
Not bad. Well, hey, by the way, you know, I'm just giving thanks for two things as we end up this podcast right here, right now. Number one, David Johnson should be in full health and ready to go for 2017. And number two, that you are not the LA Rams, okay?
Yeah, really.
Not only the loss, but the brand of football that the Rams put out there and the fact they gave up the number five pick in addition to everything else for Jared Goff. That's a tough deal.
Cal guy.
See,
wow.
A lot like his first year at Cal when he went 1-11 and he got sacked about 300 times.
So the future is bright for Jared Goff.
Let's hope for his sake and not for the Cardinals, except twice a year, that he can recover because he did it as a freshman at Cal and they actually went to the Armed Forces Bowl by the time he was a junior.
That's big time.
That'll do it for Cardinals Underground on azcardinals.com.